Welcome into The Verge, a show which covers the Baltimore Orioles minor leagues. The Verge is part of BSL Radio. Baltimore Sports and Life is dedicated to analysis and discussion on the Orioles, Baltimore Ravens, and the University of Maryland. The site has a team of writers providing coverage of those teams and houses live streaming content weekly. Join the conversations at the message board, like BSL on Facebook, and follow BSL on Twitter.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Welcome to On The Verge. This is Zach Spedden, joined as always by Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens. And on tonight's episode, we're going to get into discussing the players that the Orioles recently added to their 40-man roster. That'll be a little bit later on in our show. But first, I'm going to introduce tonight's guest. He is an infielder in the Orioles minor league system. Just had an excellent 2022 season, which started out in low A Delmarva before moving up to high A Aberdeen and then ending in double A Bowie. He is Daryl Hernandez. Daryl, how are you?
Doing good. How you guys doing?
Good, and it's great to have you on here. And just, you know, we're a few months out now from the end of the season, and you obviously had a lot of things go really well for you, excelling at three levels of the minor leagues. But now that you've had time to think about it, what do you think were the strengths and weaknesses of your season?
Yeah, I mean, starting off, it was tough for me to go back to Delmarva. That was kind of a little bit tough for me at first. And then I feel like just helping the young guys out, they didn't really know what they were doing in a lot of things. And I had to kind of guide them and kind of walk them through a lot of things. It was a lot of little mental things. And that kind of helped me out, kind of being more mature and helping being a better teammate, I guess you could say. And then after that, I mean, I did pretty good there, I would say. And then getting called up to Aberdeen, it was just a little bit different, obviously. And then it was a lot like more, I guess, more mature game, you could say, than the low A game. And then I feel like some things I did well this year was I ran pretty well, had a decent amount of stolen bases. I feel like I played some pretty good defense. At first, I was making some errors, but I cleaned that up. And then I feel like I made a lot of contact this year, some good contact. It wasn't just put the ball in play. It was more like hit the ball hard. Some things that I didn't do as well, I would say it was that I remember the errors in the beginning. I was kind of making a lot of errors. It was a young team, too. That was tough a little bit at first. And then some other things was, well, I guess just not naturally in baseball, just the ups and downs, just trying to limit the downsides. But I feel like I had a pretty good year overall, and then ultimately ended up struggling and Bowie in that little bit that I got called up. But I'm really grateful that they called me up and let me experience a level before next year. So now I know what to expect versus just staying in Aberdeen the whole year.
Yeah, you mentioned going back to Delmarva. I know the three of us are pretty shocked to see you, that break camp roster, and see you back in Delmarva, expecting you to be in Aberdeen. We thought you had a pretty decent year, that 2021, and especially considering you were 19 years old that season as well. But you go back to Delmarva, and we had Sam Jelinek on a couple of times actually this season. And honestly, the story he told the first time he came on was my favorite story that any guest told this season. And he talked about that, the leadership role you took on in Delmarva, even telling guys like, hey, it's cold. Like, I don't think you understand how cold it's going to get tonight. Make sure you wear long sleeves. But even little things like that, I mean, what was that? Just what was the vibe like for that young Delmarva team? Considering there's a lot of young international teenage prospects who were probably learning more about life than baseball down there at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, honestly, it's so much that I could tell you stories for pretty much this whole time. It's tough. You don't even think about it just because you're used to it. Like, that's just what your life is. You're used to it, but they're not used to it. So it was kind of just their everyday lives outside the field in their apartment. I was like, hey, make sure like you do this, make sure you do that. And they had no clue. They had no clue. So I kind of was like a big brother to them more. And they, a lot of them see me more like as a big brother more than anything else, even though I'm the same age. But it was more like, hey, make sure you do this. Or like, hey, guys, like, let's make sure we're on time. Because just different things like that. It was crazy. But yeah, man, those first couple of games, it was really cold. And I was like, hey, guys, make sure you guys wear long sleeves. And they would just wear the thin long sleeves. And I'd be like, no, you don't understand. It's going to be, like, really cold. Like, you need to, like, make sure you get, like, bundled up. So then, yeah, it was fun, man. When I was there, when I first got moved there, I was surprised too. And I was a little bit upset, but I mean, I just try to make the most out of it. And I'm really grateful for it because it taught me a lot about, I mean, I was born in Puerto Rico, but Puerto Rico is not even close to Dominican. And I grew up over here in the States. So it just like made me relate to them a lot more as a human being, just because they don't know, or nobody tells them anything. And I felt like I helped them out a lot in that way more than just baseball.
Yeah, that's really cool. And first off, shout out to Sean Poland and Fernando Delgado for helping us get connected here to make this happen tonight. But yeah, so, you know, these guys, these young guys coming from the international side, was there anyone that really jumped out as far as just raw ability, even if, you know, took some adjustment to get to the climate, the full season ball? Did anyone stand out as like a special talent?
I would say, you know who I think is really good? Daesung. I think Daesung is really good. It was tough for me to watch because I know how good he is, or I've seen him in practice or whatever. And the raw ability, I personally think is, it could be like a special, but it's just so raw. And he had trouble navigating stuff like that. I was like, hey, you got to do some things. You got to take care of your body, this and that. But he struggled. And I feel like he also got caught up in like, had a couple bad games and like, I need to change something. And he hits a lot of ground balls. So he was trying to lift the ball too much and then striking out. And it was like, it was a little bit more mental, I would say. But I think he has a really high ceiling if he learns to, I guess it's more mental more than anything, but yeah. I think he could be really, really good.
Yeah, we're still high on him. And we liked, even though obviously you were disappointed to go back to DeMarva, we really liked the way you came out and just dominated that league second time through. Was there anything, you know, at least was it able to show you how much you had improved from the prior season to go back to that same level?
Yeah, it honestly did. It also, that's also why I'm grateful for going back, because I feel like maybe I wouldn't have had as good a season in, I guess, Aberdeen if I didn't have as much confidence, maybe. Who knows? I feel like I had a ton of confidence in spring training, but I guess just seeing it in a full season, like starting off hot and hitting homers or whatever, it was cool, and it just made me feel like, it gave me a lot of confidence. So that was awesome.
Yeah. Speaking of Aberdeen, it seems like it's a really tough place to hit. Maybe underappreciated aspect of that park, especially for power hitters, seems to really take a lot of the sting out of the ball. Maybe it's deep in the right places. I'm not exactly sure why, but what was your experience like hitting there? And is it as much of a unique challenge as it appears to be?
Yeah, I think it is. Thankfully I played pretty well there, but it was tough and I noticed it. Thankfully, like I said, I played pretty well, but everybody's complaining pretty often. The center field, the backdrop, what's it called, the batter's eye, is see-through. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. When it's 6 o'clock or 6:30, 7 o'clock, when the game starts at 7, the first couple innings, you can't really see the spin at all. And then after that, the gaps are just really, really, really deep. The lines aren't bad, but the gaps are really, really deep. And I don't know what it is, but the ball doesn't really fly there. When we went to the South League, it was easy to hit compared to our field. But other than that, I know before there was a trouble. There was a light in center field, like a night light, like a post. And there was a light, so the ball was coming out of that light, and you couldn't pick it up, but they ended up turning that off. So that was hard, too, and, man, it was a lot of things. But some of them ended up getting fixed. I don't know if you guys remember, there was a storm at some point, and the lights got messed up. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't see the ball for a couple of days, too, but then they ended up fixing that, too. But, it's a lot of little things that the turf isn't very fast either, as you would think playing in a turf field. It's not that fast. So it's just little things like that, but I don't know. I guess people have struggled.
I'll just say, if you have some of those nights, I know, you know, talking to guys like Kobe Mayo and Connor Norby, like they get called up to Bowie, and you know, you see some fans that, you know, pull up their, you know, the stat lines and say like, well, they weren't hitting that well. And you're like, you talk to the guys and they're like, well, actually, like I was hitting the ball extremely well. And you look at how many home runs I got robbed or what your batting average maybe should have been. You're talking about kind of what you can, you know, on a night to night basis. What are the coaches sit down and talk to you guys about, or what are you looking at and saying, like, how difficult is it to say like, all right, I should have had three hits last night, or like a two home run game, but I went 0 for 4. What are you guys looking at and going over and saying, all right, just keep doing what I'm doing and hopefully the hits just start falling?
Yeah, the main thing that they preach is hitting the ball hard and a good trajectory. So I would say, like, let's say you get three of those that night and you go 0 for 4. That's something also I learned this year versus last year. Last year I was a little bit more concerned about the actual stats. This year I was kind of more, I guess, just playing the game. But basically, let's say you hit three balls hard tonight and you go 0 for 4. So you, the next day or whatever, you have a report, and that report is seen all the way up through the system. So they know that you hit three balls hard, right? And like, it wasn't just an 0 for 4 with four bad at bats. So it's seen and it's being tracked. So that gives everybody the confidence in the org to just hit the ball hard, or, you know, just have a good at bat rather than in control the strike zone. They also see that. So, I mean, just kind of more the process more than the result. Cause I guess if you go 4 for 4 with four bloopers, I mean, everybody will take that. I promise you. But at the end of the day, those days that you don't do good and you have a good process behind it, it's also being seen.
How do the coaches do in selling that to you? Because I'm sure that is a bit of an adjustment where you're not necessarily having to focus on the day-to-day stats that we can see in a box score.
Yeah. So, like I said, last year was a little bit tough for me because I would be, let's say, I don't know, over my last, I don't know, let's just say 10. And I would be hitting the ball pretty good. But I would be like, my dad or something would be like, hey, like, what happened? I didn't see the game, but I saw you went 0 for again. Like, I'm like, actually, I hit the ball well. Like, I feel good. But, you know, you can't really tell, I guess, sometimes, unless you watch the game maybe. But it just gives you that confidence. And the coaches, like I said, preach that every day. And, like, they see that. And they can show you your numbers. Like, let's say, for example, like hard hit rate or whatever.
Speaking of coaches, you spent a good portion of this season playing under first-year manager Roberto Mercado, who was honored with the organization's Cal Ripken Senior Player Development Award. Can you give us some insight into the impact he had on you and your teammates?
Yeah, it was awesome playing for him, especially he has family from Puerto Rico, so we had that little connection too, so that was cool. His parents are from Puerto Rico. But no, he was awesome. He loves winning. He's really competitive. I learned that. For example, we'd pinch hit a little bit more than other teams would. Things like that. Try to win games. So it was awesome. He worked on me on a lot, like especially my my jumps while playing defense, my reads, I guess you could say. That was the main thing that we worked on defensively, me and him specifically, because sometimes I would get, let's say, a little bit lazy with my feet in the pre-pitch. So that was one thing he, like, was on me about, making sure I got that down for the higher levels. But it was awesome working with him. He's awesome, and he loves winning. So I really enjoyed that because I'm a competitor.
Yeah, it was looking at his resume, and you have to imagine the Orioles saw a bright future with him in this organization, to have no pro experience and to be right there in high A. And that team goes to the championship series. Speaking of that championship series, that we were talking about a little bit before we came on air, but you spent a good chunk of that year in Aberdeen, but then in the year in Bowie, obviously you want to end in Bowie. You want to end in Baltimore. That's the goal. But what is that like for you to look back at that Aberdeen team and be like, was there a part of you that was like, man, I kind of wish I was playing in that championship series, kind of see that through?
Yeah. When I got called up, it was a really good feeling. I wanted to get called up, but at the same time, I was like, I mean, I just kind of just want to finish the year out and try to go win to get a ring. I wanted my ring. My first year, we almost had it, but the hurricane, I don't know if you guys know about that.
Season got washed out.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be for sure the year, and I thought we were going to be able to do it. But then I got called up, and I was like, well, I mean, I can't be mad about this. So it was awesome in Double A, and I was watching every game. I ended up getting COVID. I don't know if you guys know that or not, but. Yeah, but I was watching every game online on my MILB. So I was on it, and I was cheering them on. It was unfortunate they came up short at the end. But, yeah, I was a little bit like, man, I wish I could help them out some way. But, no, I mean, it was cool. It's just baseball. It's just minor leagues, you know. It happens all the time. So,
yeah, what are you going to do, right?
Yeah.
One thing that I think really stood out to me, at least this year, was the number of guys who were in Aberdeen and made the jump to Bowie. And it just seemed like these guys just didn't miss a beat after that promotion. Connor Norby turned into Barry Bonds down there in Bowie and AAA. Kobe Mayo takes off. I know he had a little bit of an injury, but he took off. Colton Cowser, I don't even know what you call that. Yeah. Amazing. You only got 13 games in Bowie. You mentioned the COVID. So your time got interrupted a little bit there, but you were still 4 years younger than the rest of the league. And I thought, from my viewpoint, I live here in Virginia, so my viewpoint is MILB TV as well. I still thought you looked confident at that plate, like you'd been in Bowie all year long. Have you found each jump as smooth as the rest of these players and everybody else make it seem to be?
Man, I wish I could tell you it was easy. It's not. It's not easy, obviously. But I would say for guys like Cowser got his routine down pretty well. I could tell you that when he went up to Double A, I could tell you that was part of it. Norby, I feel like Norby both – well, he had a little mechanical change. I'm sure you guys know that. And I know at least those two guys. I don't know if I talked to Kobe too much about it, but – Norby and Colton, I know that, like, let's say their expected numbers were more seen in Bowie rather than Aberdeen. Like, you know, those balls that were hitting hard in Aberdeen that were even, let's say, doubles or fly balls, those ended up being homers in Bowie. Mm-hmm. So it was like, I remember, for example, I would call Colton or something and be like, what's going on? Where's this juice coming from? He's like, man, the ball is going out here. You got to get up here. So it helps a little bit to be in Bowie rather than Aberdeen as far as those. But I'm sure that, I mean, when I played with Norby, like he said, he was ridiculous. It was crazy. And same thing they told me when I got there, they told me about Joey. They were like, dude, this guy is just, I mean, I've known Joey was really good even before everybody like started talking about him. But I mean, what he had the second half was just ridiculous. But yeah, they were all, when I got there, they were like, it's gonna be tough to replace Joey, so good luck.
Yeah, I got to talk to Kobe Mayo like before his last game in High A. I was there and I talked to him for like a couple minutes before the game, and he was telling me about my expected slugging is like 150 points higher than my actual and my batting average, and he was telling me about all that stuff. And of course, I think he hit one or two home runs in that game and then got promoted and obviously finished pretty strong considering the injury. But yeah, it's very interesting just to see the difference between levels. But it isn't often that a farm system graduates the best prospect in baseball, Adley Rutschman, and then next thing you know, they replaced him with the next best prospect in baseball, Gunnar Henderson, who obviously you've spent a lot of time with. But just tell Orioles fans just how stacked and deep this organization is right now.
I mean, the best way I could put it is I'll tell you something, actually, that other teams tell us. A lot of other teams, I don't want to say specifically who or whatever, but they'll tell us and they'll come up to us in the middle of the game and they'll be like, man, you guys got like four guys that could be hitting three hole for us in Double A when I was in High A. Like, you guys got like four of those guys that could be hitting for us in Double A or whatever. So I would say, like, that's how deep we are. I feel like we have guys that are unranked or whatever it's called, that could easily be, let's say, top 15 somewhere else. I think so. I truly think so. Because when we play other teams in spring training or in the season, I just feel like we're so much better than them. And, like, I don't mean that in, like, a mean way, but just we're so talented. Like, we're so deep in every position, I feel like. So, yeah, man, it's special, I think, what they're building. It's pretty impressive, honestly.
Yeah, we completely agree with that assessment. We put out a top 50 every month during the season, and it's like even guys that we're leaving off this top 50 are like legit prospects that could see major league time. So, yeah, it's crazy.
So when you were drafted back in 2019, MLB Pipeline actually described you as a shortstop starter kit. In other words, someone who had a little bit of everything in your game. What we've seen since then is that your power has started to shine through, particularly last season. Your speed on the base paths has been impressive, and you've really shown off your defensive versatility in a meaningful way. With all that said, is there a particular area of your game that you take the most pride in?
Oof, I honestly take the most pride in being as 5'2 as I can, like being completely honest with you. I know that's kind of avoiding your question, but seriously, I try to be like solid in every face of the game. And I feel because I feel like those players are the best players. Someone that's solid in every way, not just one hole. It's not like I'm going to have a Joey Gallo power or whatever you want to call it. So I try to be as solid as I can in everything. But, I mean, I don't know. I really do focus on everything. I try to make my defense as steady as I can. And, like I said, I keep trying to run and get my bags and, I mean, just hit, obviously. If you hit, you'll be fine. So,
with the defense in particular, just like pretty much every other infield prospect in the organization, the Orioles kind of move you around a bit, second base, shortstop, third base. We see a lot of guys play infield and outfield too. Where do you feel most comfortable out there on the diamond?
Well, before I would tell you for sure shortstop. Now I feel pretty similar, like honestly in all of them. Shortstop, I've played my whole life, so it's kind of like I feel like I have the most natural range, I guess, because I have instincts there my whole life. But I feel really good at third. I feel like I'm almost a shortstop playing third because I play usually pretty deep and I go get everything. And at second base, I feel like, I mean, it's a closer throw, so it kind of makes it easier in that sense. But I feel comfortable in every base now, and I'm happy they did that to me and I guess everybody, because I mean, now I can play everywhere. But I guess to answer your question, I guess I could say shortstop, but I don't really feel that much of a difference.
Did you get to work a lot with Tim DeJean when you were up there in Bowie? We had him on as a guest, and he seems like quite the guy to get to work with every single day.
Yeah, he brings that energy. He's fun. Yeah, I got to work with him a little bit. I work with him every spring training, like a decent amount. And then when I got to Bowie, he was on me, but he said we're going to keep working the spring training, so I'm excited.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good to have versatility, especially in the infield in this organization with so many guys coming up. It doesn't hurt to be able to play more positions. And you played with Gunnar Henderson, we were talking about a little bit earlier. You played with him in the GCL in 2019, almost won the title, and then started 2021 again, both in Delmarva. Are you surprised by his meteoric rise through the system and how much success he's been able to have so far at such a young age? And does that motivate you to follow in his track next year?
Not one bit. I'm not even remotely surprised. Since I met him, I mean, everybody could kind of tell. Like, we ended up getting him in the second round, but I mean, we'd play all the first rounders from the other teams, and I was like, dude, this guy's not even, like, it's not even close. This guy's so much better. I'm like, I don't know what our guys did, but they were a lot smarter than, in my opinion, other teams, because, I mean, look at this guy. He's so much better. Oh, it was cool. And then he also became, like, my best friend off the field. So that was awesome. But the reason why I'm not surprised, I'm sure you guys have heard, but he's a really good hard worker, like, extremely hard worker and just really competitive. And if you guys see him play, he runs hard all the time. He's really competitive. You could tell, like, he cares. And, like, That's kind of how I am. Sometimes I don't show it as much as he does, or sometimes I show it more, I guess. Sometimes I get agitated, but I think I'm not surprised at all just because he has so many physical gifts, like just being, he's a 6'4", 220, whatever, shortstop that can run and hit for power. It's just crazy. But he's made the most out of it. Like, he truly worked hard. I've gone to his house and worked out with him in the offseason a little bit, and he works really hard. So, I mean, he deserves everything. He's an awesome I can't say enough about him. He's awesome, and I'm not surprised one bit. Like, I don't know if you guys heard the story about him telling his girlfriend that he was going to make it to the big leagues this year.
Mm-mm. I didn't hear that.
It kind of came out in Twitter. That's where I saw it. But he told me that too, since we're really close friends when we were in spring training. He told me, like, he's like, I'm gonna make it to the big leagues this year. And if he would have said that to a lot of people, they would probably laugh. But I honestly believe them just because he's so, like, determined and focused. And I mean, it pushes me. It definitely motivates me as well. And to answer your other question, like, for sure, that's my goal, to get up there as soon as possible. And the way we've talked about it before is, we still talk to this day pretty often, but just like, I'm kind of like 1 year behind him in a sense. Like, I kind of had a similar year that he had last year, so kind of trying to replicate this year, not obviously replicated, but kind of like those steps, the AA, AAA. We'll see what happens about the big leagues, but I mean, it'll be awesome.
Going back a little bit, you and Gunnar kind of had a similar experience where you were both high school draftees in 2019, and the pandemic wiped out what would have been your first full seasons in 2020. Do you think it was harder for you as a player coming out of high school to bounce back from that and get into the routine of playing a full season, or do you not think there was much of a difference between you and the players that maybe had a year or two of pro ball under their belts?
I mean, looking back at it, you could say, like, those at-bats would have obviously, like, helped develop a little bit quicker, I guess you could say, just to see the pitching. But, I mean, just as a competitor, I can't say that it's that much of a difference. You're either, like, I feel like you're either going to be good or you're not. I don't know. I just, as a competitor, I don't want to say, like, oh, like, I didn't have a year, so that's the reason why. Like, no. Like, I think, you know, you either are going to have it or you're not, and you work hard. And, I mean, I worked hard throughout that COVID year, so I'm sure I gained different experiences. And, like, it made me more grateful to play the game also, like everybody has said, like, having that time off. But I don't want to say it makes a difference just because everybody went through it in the world, not just, like, baseball players. Every sport did, but obviously, in baseball, it's pretty important to get at-bats just to, you know, keep developing. But I don't want to say that it made that big of a difference.
So we're here in the offseason. Hopefully, it's winding down soon. I'm ready to get you guys back out on the field and watch you guys. But what's your plan for the rest of this offseason? Is there anything in particular you're focused on, an area of your game you're focusing on, or what's kind of the general plan for a hitter like yourself over the winter?
Yeah, so my main focus this offseason, which thankfully I'm doing a good job of, is putting on strength, just building my base, building my foundation for this year, hopefully having the longest year of my life, meaning like AA, AAA, and hopefully playing as many games as I can. So just getting ready for that physically, and just putting on some weight a little bit. I've put on some weight every year, but this year I'm trying to put on a little bit more. Just because, and keeping my speed, obviously, I'm running every day or mostly every day, and I'm putting on quite a bit of weight, I would say. And that's my main focus right now. And just building that base, that's like the main thing. And then outside of that is cleaning up my swing path, just making it as clean as possible. Just playing with guys like Norby, like you guys said. He has such a good path. That's why he drives the ball so well to right center. So, like just trying to work on that, honestly, that's, like, are my main two focuses. And obviously everything, I mean, not just that, but those are my main two focuses, I would say, that just being able to drive the ball to right field and just get stronger.
So what are you doing in your downtime? We know that Gunnar Henderson and Colton Cowser obviously get into their Legos. That was a big story last year. What are you doing? You playing the new God of War? You playing Marvel Snap on your phone? What do you get up to?
Well, I'm a pretty laid-back person, so I kind of just hang out with the family, and then I play some video games. I got the new Call of Duty. I was actually playing with Gunner the other day, so yeah, we play some Call of Duty, and then I'll play some of the show. I enjoy my time playing the show right now because during the season, after going over 4, you don't want to go play online and take another beating in baseball. So I play it in the off season, but I try not to play it in the season.
Makes sense. And last question I got is, what are your goals for 2023? Call your shot. Are you going to do the Gunner and get called up at the end of next year, set up for Rookie of the Year in 2024? What's going on?
So I would love that. My goals is honestly just to enjoy every day. I feel like that's what I did this year. I like truthfully, a lot of people say that, but I try to enjoy every single game and let the stuff take care of itself. My goal is just to be the best version of myself. I feel like it'll naturally take care of itself, but obviously playing at least two levels in 1 year is something everybody wants to do. And I guess you could say that's my goal. I think everybody wants to get call up every year. So we could say that.
Well, Daryl, we really enjoyed having you on tonight, and thank you so much for taking the time to join us. And best of luck getting ready for 2023. We're certainly excited to see you back out in the field.
Thank you. Appreciate it, you guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Daryl Hernandez, a prospect in the Orioles farm system. And in a moment, we're going to talk about the interview and get into the players that were protected from the Rule 5 draft with 40-man roster spots last week. But first, the DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is coming soon to Maryland, but you don't have to wait to get on the action. Right now, new customers who sign up with promo code On The Verge will receive $200 in free bets on launch day after registering. Plus, 5 lucky customers will win a $100,000 free bet on launch day. It won't be long until you can bet same game parlays, money lines, props, spreads, and more right here in Maryland with DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and sign up with the code On The Verge to receive $200 in free bets on launch day after registering. Plus, we're giving 5 customers a $100,000 bonus free bet on launch day only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code On The Verge. So, Bob, Nick, we just heard from Daryl Hernandez, a rising prospect in the Orioles system, about his breakout 2022 season and some of his goals for 2023. What were your thoughts in our discussion with him?
I thought the interesting for me, the talk about Aberdeen, I felt like was interesting. It truly is. We talked about this all the time, right? Guys like, you know, TT Bowen's only getting what, a couple of home runs this year. Connor Norby getting called up, even though the numbers didn't look that great in Aberdeen. Kobe Mayo, all these guys. Yeah, you're working on things, but clearly there were a lot of stuff going on down there in Aberdeen. Not just on the field as far as like the field stuff, but just Aberdeen in general, man. And so credit to those guys, I think, for pulling through. And it's good to hear that, you know, the organization, they see that, and the players understand that the entire organization sees that, and they know that, you know, they're not like the fans just looking at the box scores, right? They are fully understanding what these guys are doing, and it's good that the players understand that so they feel better about that game. And so, yeah, but yeah, I'm cheering for Hernandez big time. I think we said it before that I think, honestly, and I'm not just saying this because he was just on the show, we've been saying it all year, that he's one of the more underrated prospects in this entire system, I think, and gets so overshadowed because of Gunner and Norby and Ortiz and now Jackson Holliday in the system as well. But you got another one there in Daryl Hernandez.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, he's an easy top 10 prospect in any Orioles top prospect list before, what, 2020, 2019, something like that. I mean, put up a fantastic year. And it's funny, he said, even before he said that he was focusing on adding weight, I was like, he seems a little bit bigger than I remember. You know, it definitely 2021 and even last year. So that's good to see. Maybe that makes the power a little bit more natural when it comes. And Yeah, the stuff with the batter's eye in Aberdeen that helps explain a lot there. And it's just, you can tell that the Orioles are good at player development, probably because they're good at getting buy-in. I mean, every guy we talk to, it's the same thing. Hey, this is what, you know, they wanted me to do. They want me to hit the ball harder. They want me to hit the ball more in the air. And once I started doing that, it just seems like they're able to get these guys to do the things that are best for them in a, I don't know, like you said, he didn't exactly buy into it like perfectly in 2021, but he got there and it's working. So hopefully that's just, you know, everyone's on the same page and working towards the same goal. So that was cool to hear.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think that, you know, we know the Orioles have their way of looking at things for hitters and for pitchers. But for hitters, what's what we were discussing with Daryl about how hard you hit the ball, the swing decisions. That's all well and good, but if you can't sell it, then the players don't buy into it. It's not going to be implemented. I think what we're seeing in his breakthrough this past season is evidence of this. The players are buying into it, and they're able to make adjustments based on that. And I think for him specifically, he's just such a well-rounded prospect. He just does a little bit of everything really well, and it was interesting to hear him talk about how he wants to be a true five-tool player. Be good at a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I mean, three levels last year. I mean, 12 home runs. When he went back to Delmarva, he matched his 2021 home run total in like 250 fewer plate appearances. So clearly he was learning. I mean, 21 doubles, 12 home runs last year, 5 triples, stolen bases, 32 stolen bases. Yeah, completely well-rounded, 341 on base percentage. And he's 21, not even 21 and a half. Like, he's going to be about 3 years younger. If he's going to start next year in Bowie, obviously, but he's still going to be about 3 years younger than the rest of the competition. He's going to be a 21-year-old kid still, essentially, in Bowie at the start of the 2023 season. So, yeah, I mean, if he pops off next year in Bowie, he mentioned the COVID thing. We know that got Bowie like twice majorly last year. If he pops off in Bowie next year, yeah, by the end of the year, he could be one of those guys we're saying, call up Hernaez. Where's Hernaez?
Yeah, I kind of get like him and Gunnar's friendship. It's like Manny Machado, Jonathan Scope vibes. That would be cool to see them in the major leagues together doing like cool handshakes in the clubhouse or something. But it's just the more we see from these guys, it's like, who was it we talked to? Pretty much everyone, but not just are these players talented. They seem like they have good heads on the shoulders, seem like good people. And yeah, I don't want to trade anybody now. We got to keep them all. We got to find a way to fit them all on the roster.
Yeah, that was Brad Selig. I think when you guys had him on, and I went there for that one, but that's that quote he said, he told you guys, just stuck with me. It's, if a guy fails in this org, I don't want it to be because he didn't have the makeup. So they draft guys who have just as good head on their shoulders as they do baseball talent. And yeah, with all the interactions we've had with players, you see that. I mean, these are all dudes. And even the stories you hear, and we didn't really get into too much of it with Hernaez there, but the stories of the coaches themselves saying there's no clicks. It's not like hitters over here, pitchers over there. It's everybody's like one solid unit. And it's just fun to see. And the story about how other teams coming up and saying, yeah, you guys are stacked. I think that's a testament to, yeah, this farm system truly is a stacked unit.
Yeah, and I like the story with Desan. He still thinks Michel Desan has a lot of talent, and so do we. So that was good confirmation on our end to stick with him, and maybe 2023 is the breakout year for that guy who we thought might have been happening this past year, but wasn't meant to be.
Well, speaking of talent in the organization, that was reflected with last week's decision to protect 5 players from the Rule 5 draft by giving them spots on the 40-man roster. If you listened to our show last week, we talked about these 5 players a lot, so it's not a particular surprise to us that Grayson Rodriguez, Seth Johnson, Drew Rahm, Noah DeNoyer, and Joey Ortiz were given 40-man roster spots. So that works out to a total of 4 pitchers plus a position player, all of them but Johnson, who had Tommy John surgery last summer, should be out in the field healthy and ready to go in 2023. You know, I think that kind of the takeaway that I had was, number one, it's another show of how deep this organization's pitching depth is and how deep it's getting, that we see 4 pitchers protected, 3 of which could play a role in the major leagues next year. And then Ortiz, just the rise he has had over the last year, really going back to the start of 2021, but then in particular, the second half of 2022, to become one of the best infield prospects in an organization that is stacked with infield prospects. So, Bob, I don't think that the news was particularly surprising to us to see those five players protected, but what were your thoughts?
I was just pleasantly surprised. I mean, I was glad. I think I said all five were locks, but still, it's like, you know, we saw Logan Gillespie be like that surprise guy last year, and Vespi left off. So you never know what the team's going to do. But yeah, I was pleasantly surprised to see DeNoyer on there. I'm sure some people were not as convinced as us that he was a lock to be added to the 40 man. But yeah, I was happy. I thought maybe there could have been a mystery sixth guy, or maybe for the fact that they left someone off, that they had a trade close to enacting, but obviously that hasn't been the case. Although it has been exciting to see, I think today and maybe last night, just Orioles and Michael Elias name keep coming up when it comes to, you know, who's active, who's in active trade and free agent discussions. It seems like the Orioles are all over it, which is cool to hear until we get some actual traction there. But yeah, I bet you all four of those guys that are healthy, Johnson obviously not going to make his major league debut in 2023, but I bet you all four of those guys will be pitching / hitting, fielding for the Orioles at some point in 2023, and I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, no shocker. The only shock, you know, there wasn't that much of a shock, but I was expecting a surprise six person. I thought it would have been fun. I was still waiting for the Cage Stroud chaos to commence. But, I honestly enjoyed some of the quotes. I know all these guys jumped on Zooms with Orioles reporters. And I liked some of the quotes I thought were just a little bit interesting. Like Joey Ortiz, you know, talking about how, you know, he never really heard this, you know, glove first kind of moniker before. And now he's on this mission to prove to everyone that he's not just this glove first shortstop, right? That he can really do it all. And I think shout out to Jeff Ponto over at Baseball America. He was putting out some good numbers, you know, looking at Ortiz, the guys who were added to 40-man rosters, and Ortiz was up there among the best of them in terms of average exit velo and chase rate and swing rate. And so, like, Joey Ortiz, the bat thing, that's legitimate. And Drew Rom wanting to add a couple ticks to the fastball velo, right? I did find it interesting where he, I don't know if this is just him being humble and saying what you got to say in the interview, but he wasn't sure where he stood. And so he was, you know, really happy, obviously, to get that call. But we know Rom. I feel like that's when he was on our show, he knows exactly what kind of pitcher he is. He knows exactly what his ceiling is with his velo, which is why, you know, everything else, all other parts of his game, he's worked so hard on. But yeah, if he can add just a tick or two, we know the data about every tick on that fastball, how, you know, less productive hitters are against that fastball. So if he's the guy who's sitting 94, 95, I think he could really take off in the big leagues. And then, yeah, with DeNoyer, it's just, I think it's a testament to this organization really does believe he has major league stuff. What the future role is, I don't really know, but I put DeNoyer in this group of like Ryan Watson and Justin Armbruster, Peter Van Loon even, and some other guys. Like, they had really good 2022s, and they're right there, like, on the verge. I always want to say that phrase, and I hate saying it. Like, I feel like, but I can't think of another phrase there. But those guys are all like right there on at this tipping point of they could be really good, productive major leaguers or flame out here. And what they've shown is, I think with DeNoyer's case specifically, it's the Orioles believe in that stuff. So we'll see if he makes it to the big leagues next year.
Yeah, with Rom, I mean, I think we've always thought very highly of him. He's been in our top 15, top 20 pretty much ever since we started doing these rankings. And I mean, he's still what, 22 years old. So he's got a better starter kit than John Means did when he came up and became the ace of the Orioles. So, I mean, potential is there, and his floor is high as well. Like, easily could be a multi-inning reliever, just able to, especially if he's going to be able to sit in close to the mid 90s. I mean, he's going to be a weapon, whatever the role ends up being. And again, I'm just starting to really get excited for next season already, and it's November. So,
yeah, completely agree. And I want to talk about DeNoyer for a minute, because to me, this is such a good story, and I don't know that you can really say enough good about it. he was an undrafted free agent in 2019, back when the draft was still 40 rounds. He does not get drafted. He gets picked up by the Orioles later that summer. And really what he has done, especially last year and in the last 2 years, is emerge as one of the better arms in this farm system. And he's the kind of guy who you could look at and you know, it's easy to say reliever. And ultimately, I think that's probably where he slots in. But there's the makings of a potential starter there with the stuff that he has.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he's pumping mid-90s as well. He's got a ridiculous curveball. The slider, I think he's another one of these guys that picked up that Jordan Lyles sweeper or whatever, Austin Voth, you know, that sweeper. It really works for him, and he's got a really good changeup as well. I mean, he's got a four-pitch mix, and we've said it for years now. The organization clearly believes in the stuff, and the results are there as well. So, yeah, I see no reason to believe that he couldn't be like a Drew Rasmussen for the Rays, like a guy that can surprisingly give you 5-6 really, really solid innings most times out and just surprise a lot of people.
And you just look at his numbers too. And in Double A, I don't know where exactly I saw this, but there might have been an issue about like stretching him out. I guess he really didn't get the opportunity to like fully stretch out. And so maybe the Orioles did want to use him more as a starter, but it just didn't work out that way. I know he was on the IL, I think, a couple of times himself, but you just look at those Double A numbers, like 51 2/3 innings, more than 12 strikeouts per nine innings and less than 2 walks per nine innings. Like that's going to play at the Double A level. ERA at 2.61 and the XFIP not much higher, 3.06, right? So and this guy's clearly got the stuff. He had a really good year out there in Arizona. I think all things considered, when you look at the hitting talent, when you look at the pitching environments, I think Bob mentioned this a lot last week. He's coming off that really good performance as well out in Arizona, setting himself up nicely for 2023, where, like, we'll see. I don't really, honestly, at this point, I don't even really care if he's in the rotation or in the bullpen. Like, if the organization believes in the stuff that much, we talked about before how the changing role of baseball in games, right? If he wants to be that Drew Rasmussen, that's perfectly fine too. Or if you just want to be this guy that, you know, he's a four-inning guy out of the bullpen. You pair with a D.L. Hall or you pair with a Grayson Rodriguez, because I'm sure, you know, the rain's not going to be completely off Grayson Rodriguez next year in the major league. So you pair these up with guys, and that's just going to be, I think, baseball. That's how this game's moving forward, and it's smart. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with Denora. I'm excited to see what he can do in AAA first, though. Still got one more test.
Yeah, I mean, and this trend in baseball, I feel like the Orioles have really set themselves up for it just – because obviously we don't have those top end guys outside of Hall and Rodriguez, as everyone wants to point out, but we are stocked with depth with guys like DeNoyer and Armbruster. And we could just list 30 names, but I mean, there's only 5 starters. There's still plenty of room for guys with the stuff and the talent that a lot of the pitchers have in this organization that are going to find a role to help a team get to that playoffs. And, you know, the betting is opening up in Maryland. I might put my World Series bet on the Orioles already. Let's do it.
DraftKings on the Verge.
Yes. Check the episode description.
So I think that if you look at how these players, want to talk about how these players fit into the team in 2023. Rodriguez would seemingly be the one with the strongest chance to make the opening day roster right now. He would be in the major leagues already if not for that lat injury. We have to see how the offseason plays out with how the Orioles address their middle infield depth. But I get the feeling that Joey Ortiz could be one of those guys where after a month, if he gets off to a good start at AAA, that's going to be the name that fans are clamoring for, that they want to see. And then Rahman DeNoyer, I just think it's about getting AAA innings for them at this point. And with Rahm, you continue working him as a starter. DeNoyer, you know, maybe you have a little bit of a hybrid type situation, knowing that he may need to go up as either a starter or a reliever or a multi-inning reliever, but maybe try to build him up that hybrid role.
Yeah, I don't see Rahm would be the only guy. Grayson's making the opening day roster. If he doesn't, there's an issue. But Rahm would be the only other guy who I think has the slightest odds of making the opening day roster. I think they're very low. I know he talked about finding a feel for a new changeup grip. So, you know, there are still some things I'm sure he could work on in AAA, but he's not going to be too long. Him and Ortiz aren't going to be for AAA for too long before they're going to be ready to contribute in the major leagues next year. And so, yeah, I don't know. Like, I want to see what Rom looks like in spring training. What's the fastball velo at? You know, is he still using that? Does he still drop the arm angle? Is he still going sidearm against these major league hitters? What's his comfort level there? Like, I think I mentioned at our live show, like, if there is one prospect of all the prospects in the system, if there is one prospect who I want to pan out more than anyone else, it's Drew Rom. Just because I think that'd be a real testament to the pitching development for this organization and what they're capable of.
Yeah, I would imagine Grayson's going to start either the fourth or fifth game of the regular season for the Baltimore Orioles, just because, you know, you want to start him a little bit later, lower in that rotation, just for innings reasons, basically. But there's no reason. I mean, they're going to want him to be eligible for that Rookie of the Year and get a draft pick along with Gunner. So that seems like a lock to me. And I think Rahm and Denoyer will both be in the AAA rotation to start the year, most likely. And Ortiz, I feel like he could fight for a spot on the opening day roster, especially if he comes out hot. But depends on how the offseason goes. But worst case, he's in AAA. And if he picks up where he left off, then it's not going to take long for him to get pretty close to regular playing time at the major league level. I mean, spring training is going to be so much fun. It's going to be filled with guys that have potential, and we're going to get to see how they do against major league competition. Like we saw John Rhodes last year. Is it going to be Judd Fabian getting in some spring training games this year? So again, just continue to be excited for the months to come.
I'll start with Nick on this question as a follow-up point. Were you surprised that there was not a sixth player protected? And could you see a scenario where maybe one or two Orioles, current Orioles, are taken in the major league phase of the Rule 5 draft?
Like, I was a little surprised, like I said, that a sixth guy wasn't added, just because, I mean, even if it's a reliever, you can stash him now. And if you have to take him off, then, like, I don't know. But I think the only guy that I was kind of worried about was probably Kyle Branovich. I don't think we really talked about him too much last week. I don't remember, but you know, Zach Peak, I know some of the Zach Peak stands online were getting worried. They're getting a little feisty. Zach Peak's not getting picked up. You're nothing to worry about there. Like, maybe a guy like Easton Lucas or Nolan Hoffman, since they were just out in Arizona, maybe if a scout really liked what they saw, he gets on a team's list. But other than that, like, I don't really see anybody who would get drafted and stick. I have a hard time finding one of those guys, except maybe Branovich. That's the only guy. I just feel like he's in this unique situation where, like, yes, he's recovering from Tommy John, but he should be back sooner rather than later. I think you always hear that, you know, the command is one of the last things to happen, to come back to a guy after Tommy John surgery, but he's already kind of this command artist himself. So he doesn't rely on this high velo fastball. So I imagine it won't take him too long to get back on the mound and feeling more like himself in AAA. But is a team really going to want to play that roster game with him for the next 2 years before he meets his requirements or whatever? I just don't see anybody getting drafted and sticking. And the only other name I saw a lot of people throw out, I don't know, am I missing something, like with Adam Hall here? I saw Adam Hall's name thrown out as a big name, not protected. He's not. It's okay. If you're a Hall fan, he's not going anywhere either.
Yeah, I don't really – I mean, I could see a guy or two getting taken from the Orioles, but I don't see really anyone other than Branovich, if, you know, he does come back faster than the expected timeline. Like, it looks like maybe a team takes a shot at him and he could stick around. But, like, a Lucas I could see getting picked, or even an Adam Hall. Maybe some team takes a flyer on him. But I just can't see a player like that making it the entire year and getting lost from the Orioles organization. So, and it's good to see. I did, Vivek mentioned it in the comments, and I've seen it from other places too, that it's a pretty stacked eligible group for the Rule 5 coming up. I think I saw someone, wish I remembered exactly who it was, saying that it could be the most talented Rule 5, you know, players available for the Rule 5 draft ever. And yeah, I think there are arms and players that are going to be more valuable to teams than an Easton Lucas, Nolan Hoffman, as intriguing as they are. So I'm not too concerned. I think the Orioles made the right calls, and pitching always is going to go above position prospects in the Rule 5, just because you can put someone at the last man in the bullpen. It's a little easier to play with that than a guy who, you know, he's going to be on the bench a lot. How much can you develop him, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I feel like if someone is taken out of the Orioles system, it's easiest to see Easton Lucas or Nolan Hoffman going, because both of them are coming off that AFL experience. Lucas being a left-hander, possibly having starter stuff, could give him an edge. Hoffman is a guy who might have been protected if we had seen more of him this year. You know, I do think he's at a little bit of a disadvantage compared to DeNoyer, in the sense that I think he is probably more of a typical one-inning reliever than a multi-inning guy. But there's still a lot of things there to like about him, and I could see him getting protected. I think the other thing, too, is that sometimes with trying to figure out if a player is going to stick, it's almost a matter of what team takes him. Because if you go back to Zach Pop in 2021, when he was ultimately ended up with the Marlins out of the Rule 5 draft, I think he was originally drafted by Arizona and then traded there, he was pretty bad the first month of the season. And you have to wonder, if that had been a team that had aspirations of contending, would he have stuck the full year? As it was, he did stick the full year, and he was fine in 2021. But that's going to be part of it, too, is what team takes these guys and what is their depth going to look like. And then with Bronovich, I think there's an argument for taking him if you feel like he's going to come back quickly. Just like I said last week, I feel like we really don't know anything about where he is in his recovery process. And I have to wonder, if he was close, would the Orioles have protected him? And then it's also, too, what's it going to look like for him getting back on the mound and getting into his repertoire, especially because we know that knuckle curveball is a big pitch for him. And how long is it going to take for him to get the full repertoire back? But, you know, yeah, that's a guy that I think, had he not gotten hurt, might have actually been in the big leagues before the year was over. And you could see where, you know, a team, especially one that doesn't have a ton of starting pitching depth at the top of its organization, might take a flyer on him.
Yeah, I just don't see, like, how many teams out there are truly in a position to use a 40-man spot on a guy like Bronovich, or like a real project type pitcher. Yeah, I just don't see any teams wanting, even teams that are tanking, right? That's easy to say, but those guys are still going to need every 40-man spot possible. So are you really going to use it on some high A pitcher, a guy who hasn't reached high A yet, and try to work with him? I don't know if I see that anymore in today's game. And so that's why, you know, like you mentioned, this is going to be a deep class. It is going to be fun, because not having a Rule 5 draft last year certainly helps this grow this draft class again. But like, from the Orioles perspective, in terms of, you know, people being worried about other guys getting sniped, I'm not worried about the major league phase. Honestly, I'm worried about the minor league phase of the Rule 5 draft. Like, that's the phase that I'm going to pay attention to more, because I think that's where we could lose, you know, 2-3 guys at least. And those guys don't have to stick anywhere. They are part of that organization. You don't have to stick in AAA. You don't have to stick at any particular level. They can do whatever with you, as long as you pay. It's like 10 grand, I think. But so that's the phase that I'd be more worried about, as far as losing pitchers specifically.
Yeah, I could see that, especially if you're looking at the type of arms that could be starters or relievers in the middle of the organization. Well, that'll be something to keep an eye on here over the coming weeks. The Rule 5 draft will be on December 7th, and we'll have more extensive coverage leading up to that. That'll be part of this year's winter meetings. Next week, we'll be joined by John Mioli, the author of Maximizing Playoff Odds, a Baltimore Orioles newsletter. He's actually coming on to talk about his work with Baseball America and the Orioles prospect rankings, which he is doing once again this offseason. We're looking forward to having him on. That, by the way, for those keeping score at home, will be John's 6th appearance, putting him second behind Dr. Stephen Loftus at 7. So something to think about as we head into tomorrow, as we get ready for next week. In the meantime, check out BaltimoreSportsAndLife.com for all the latest coverage on the Orioles, Ravens, college sports, and more. And while you're there, hop on the message board and join a discussion with fellow readers of the site, as well as contributors. And be sure to follow us on Twitter. I'm going to give Nick a quick second here to talk about something we're actually starting in preparation for the Rule 5 draft on Twitter that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I started this today just because I need something to do to pass the time over the next week. So Vivek here in the comments, Vivek is the king. I'm sure we will get Vivek on as we get close to the Rule 5 draft to break these down. I am no Vivek. I am no expert here, but I've just been kind of going through. I got a thread up on Twitter. We'll be updating until December 7th. Just intriguing names. They may not necessarily be guys that the Orioles have a shot of even targeting, but just interesting names, numbers, some videos, something to do to help pass the time between now and December 7th for the Rule 5 draft diehards out there.
Well, we'll be looking forward to that. Thank you to Daryl Hernandez for making an appearance on the show tonight. For Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens, this is Zach Spedden. You've been listening to On the Verge.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
That'll do it for this week's episode of On the Verge. Be sure to check out our Patreon page where you can help show your support for the show and get bonus content, including monthly top 50 updates to our prospect list and daily game recaps during the season and much, much more.